morning. Welcome to Midday on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Gary Ankton. Glad you could join us. Minnesota legislators and Governor Jesse Ventura have all agreed that Minnesota taxpayers will get a break this year. They all agree that taxpayers will get another rebate this summer. And all three parties agree that some other tax cuts are probably a good idea. But after that, there is a huge disagreement over who will see their taxes cut and by how much. Minnesota House passed a wide-ranging tax cut bill yesterday that's built around an across-the-board income tax cut for all Minnesotans. But the governor says the House bill is reckless. He says he won't sign it. And Senate Tax Committee Chair Doug Johnson says he won't even read it. The Senate has passed a much smaller tax cut bill. Well, this week, a House-Senate conference committee will begin trying to work out a compromise between those widely divergent viewpoints. And today on Midday, we've been joined by two of the key members of the legislature who will try to find some common ground. House Tax Committee Chair Ron Abrams, a Republican from Minnetonka, and Senate Tax Committee member John Hottinger, a DFLer from Mankato. We also invite you to join our conversation. If you've got a question or comment about the tax bills that are being considered now by the legislature, give us a call. Our Twin City area number is 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. If you're calling from outside the Twin Cities, you can reach us toll-free, and that number is 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Representative Abrams, Senator Hottinger, thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for inviting us, Gary.
Let me ask both of you this question. It seems like there are two big areas of disagreement. Obviously, there are a lot of details that differ from bill to bill, but two big areas of disagreement, namely, one, just how much money is actually available for tax relief. In other words, is the Ventura administration's revenue forecast accurate? And then there's the issue of fairness, whether the wealthiest Minnesotans should get an income tax cut. Is that basically the heart of the disagreement between the House and Senate and the governor, for that matter? Representative Abrams?
Well, I think it goes further than that, Gary. The tax bill that passed the House yesterday contains a number of other provisions that, frankly, are missing from the Senate bill. We have what's euphemistically around here called Phase 3 of property tax reform. We believe that this is the year to continue the reform of the property tax system. And there are a number of other areas in which the House has taken a position, and for a variety of reasons, the Senate did not.
Mm-hmm. Senator Hottinger, would you agree that those are the big issues, or do you see some other major points as well?
Well, I agree with Representative Abrams. There are other matters, but I think the two key issues, and certainly the fundamental one before we can even get started in trying to resolve the tax bill, is how much money is available. Do we follow the practice of the last number of decades by using the administration numbers, or do we, as legislators, set our own numbers?
Mm-hmm. Representative Abrams, why not go with the Ventura administration forecast? The administration says there's $550 million a year available, either for permanent tax cuts or permanent spending increases. Your bill would cut taxes a great deal more than that. But why not work within the parameters of the revenue forecast?
Well, what we disagree with is the definition of structural surplus, and it seems to be a concept that only seems to rear its head when Republicans want to cut taxes. I point out in 1997 the budget that was passed by the legislature, by the DFL State Senate, had an $850 million structural imbalance. I point out that the budget that was signed last May amid great hoopla by Governor Ventura had about a $200 million structural imbalance using the new definition of structural balance. The concept of structural balance that's being promoted by the Ventura administration is far different from the concept of structural balance that has been used in the past. And I would suspect that even though I guess Senator Johnson and I will be involved as figures in the discussion as to how much is available and how that ought to be allocated, I would suspect that the decision in the end will ultimately be made by the Speaker of the House, Steve Swigum, and the Majority Leader of the Senate, Roger Moore.
Mm-hmm. Senator Hottinger, why should we think that this year's revenue forecast or the latest revenue forecast is any more accurate than the previous ones, all of which have been inaccurate?
Well, even if we accept that theory, we don't know if the next one's going to be low or high. And that's why we try and maintain our budget decisions based on the constitutional requirement that we have a balanced budget and the projections we get from the executive branch. The alternative is for us to get involved in the kind of fight that's going on in Washington, where the Congress and the executive branch are fighting over how much money is available. I don't think we want to set up another legislative agency to make those decisions. I think we need to rely on it. Going forward, as I understand it, there are going to be some changes in how we get those projections, and hopefully they'll be more accurate. We won't have big deficits, and we won't have big surpluses, because we'll have accurate measurements, and the legislature can make good choices. Mm-hmm. But I think Representative Abrams, and you'll be surprised how much we agree, given our major disagreements, I think he's right that we can't really do much in this tax bill, and he and Senator Johnson can't provide leadership in finding common ground until a decision is made, especially as it relates to the governor and the House's different points of view on it.
So really the major decision here, the overall decision needs to be made by the Speaker, the Senate Majority Leader, and the governor?
I think that's kind of foundational, at least.
You know, we hope that the governor is involved, Gary. We can't guarantee his positive participation, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, given some of the rhetoric that has been used about legislators in general, given the general, I think it, on a bipartisan basis, kind of the chip on the shoulder mentality by a lot of commissioners, it becomes pretty difficult for the governor to come in and say, "Now let's be pals and try to resolve this." So, I think in the first instance, you may see Senator Moe and Speaker Swigum may want to take a look at this issue.
Is it conceivable that the House and the Senate, despite their what would appear to be big differences, could come to an agreement without the governor's participation, pass a bill, and just eliminate the governor from the process, essentially?
It's possible. It's not my first choice, but the rhetoric out of the administration simply has to change. And I don't say that just as a Republican member of the House. I just say it as a member of the legislature that the rhetoric has been very unfortunate recently.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think it is. Representative Abrams is right. It's very difficult for us to try and find common ground when we keep getting kicked off the common ground. The governor's comments, although not necessarily his staff and other members of the administration, do make it more difficult to find areas where we can reach agreement. I think, as would Representative Abrams, that the first best outcome would be for the governor's office to participate in making and helping us find those decisions. But if they don't, then the House and the Senate may have to deal with our differences ourselves.
Now, Senator Hottinger, Senator Johnson was quoted at least as saying that he doesn't even plan to read the House bill. And
it's over 400 pages long. I certainly have something better to do than read all 400 pages.
but also says there will be no tax cut bill passed if the House insists on trying to cut taxes for the wealthiest Minnesotans, the upper bracket of the income tax. Is the Senate just dug in on that, or is there some room for discussion?
Well, we feel very strongly about that. I think the focus of the Senate bill has been on middle-income taxpayers and their families. We recognize that when you look at tax policy, you have to look at all the taxes. And if you do that, the people in the lower 25% of the state in terms of income pay 26% of the taxes. So we have an overall fair system. People pay according to their means, and it's not disproportionate. We want to keep it that way, and to have an additional tax reduction at the top level, I think across the board means people get fair treatment, not the folks at the top end get three tax cuts, does start to unbalance what's been a pretty fair across-the-board tax system.
Do you see that as an ultimate deal-breaker, though?
Well, I think Senator Johnson has made very clear a couple of times that he does not believe that the Senate would pass a increase or a decrease in the upper level of taxes. And we look at statistics like the top 1% of taxpayers who average about $900,000 a year would get the same total amount of tax relief as the 60% who make less than $37,000. We don't think that that's something we can sell to our colleagues.
Representative Abrams, are you willing to forego a tax cut bill altogether for that cut in the highest tax bracket?
Gary, I have been very careful not to draw immovable lines in the sand, and I would think it would be unfortunate if Senator Johnson did. Let me report rather than appear to be dug in on this one issue. If there is no tax bill, there will be no capital investment bill. It is really that simple, just given the membership of the House majority. As to the point that Senator Hottinger made, the rate cuts in the House tax bill are identical to the rate cuts in the bill that passed the House and the Senate last year with strong bipartisan support. And the Senate DFL caucus was so proud of those across-the-board tax cuts that in the brochure that they passed out from their campaign committee at the state fair, they took credit for reducing the all three rates. And again, the rate cuts in the House bill do favor the middle bracket. So, you know, we can pick each other's bill apart, and I can say what is a deal breaker in the Senate bill, and Senator Johnson can do the same to the House tax bill. But in the end, my goal is to have a tax bill that has strong support in both the House and the Senate, and frankly, to have a successful conclusion to the Senate to the session. But the rhetoric when one says that that we will not have a tax bill if this is the this provision is in it certainly don't help the process along at all.
But
well, I think as we go into the conference committee, we're in agreement that what we want to do is have an agreement at the end of the bill, at the end of the session, so that at State Fair this time, both the Republicans and the Democrats can take credit for a good bill, especially a good bill for middle-income taxpayers.
We're talking this hour with House Tax Committee Chair Ron Abrams and Senate Tax Committee Member John Hottinger about the tax legislation that legislators are trying to put together now. The House has passed its bill, Senate has passed its bill, the governor's weighed in, and conference committee will try to work out some differences in those bills. If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call here, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000, outside the Twin Cities, 1-800-242-2828. 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Now, everybody seems to agree, am I right about this, that there will be another tax rebate as opposed to permanent tax cuts?
I think so. Ron, go ahead.
I think that there is agreement. I think that there is some disagreement about precisely who would be covered and what mechanisms are going to be used, et cetera. But I think the rebate issue, at least in the magnitude, we are in somewhat of of agreement, I would suspect.
Mm-hmm. Is there, as I understand it, Senator Hottinger, the Senate bill includes some retroactive provisions so that people who didn't get a rebate last year would get one this time?
Right. We passed a rebate bill very early in the session, and that did include some retroactive rebates for some people who were left out, as it turns out, from the last rebate. And we thought that was an equity issue, a fairness issue. But as Representative Abrams indicated, in terms of the general magnitude of the rebate, I think we're very close to an agreement, and I think we both need to caution folks that it's not going to be as large as the rebate last time.
Mm-hmm. And the license tab fees. Now, this is a point that the governor has stressed over and over again. This is the one thing that he has said that he wants done. He wants a cap put on those license tab fees, $75. There is a modest reduction proposed in the Senate bill in license tab fees, no cut at all in the House bill. Do you see, are you folks going to move closer to the governor's position on that, or how's that going to play out? Representative Abrams?
Frankly, I doubt it, and I doubt it for a couple of reasons. First, license tab fees on a per capita basis in Minnesota are about 21st, 22nd, 23rd in the nation. We have other tax categories that really do stick out as a sore thumb. such as in the income tax area, and Senator Hodinger and I can disagree as to how that relief ought to be structured, but our per capita burden is fairly high there. And our commercial, industrial, and our apartment tax rates are third in the nation. And as I have said rhetorically, show me the Minnesotan who has moved from the state because of the high license tap fees. I can show you Minnesota businesses that have moved because of commercial industrial property taxes. I can show you Minnesotans who have moved to Florida and Texas and Arizona over high income tax rates. So I guess it's in play in the Senate bill, but it is not necessarily a priority for the House.
Senator Hodinger, is it a big priority for senators, or should we look at this as a kind of olive branch to the governor?
Well, it's certainly a place where we have an agreement with the governor, and we've restructured his approach. We've restructured in a way to make sure all people with motor vehicles get some relief, not just the ones who are paying over $75. But I think it's a sincerely held position of our caucus and of the Senate that this sort of relief in the area of motor vehicles is something that people want, and we are responsive to folks in that regard. We've also replaced the loss of revenue, which is a concern, by having a proposal for the Constitution to dedicate some of the motor vehicle excise tax to transportation to make up the hole in the budget where these license fees have been going.
David's on the line from Minnetonka with a question. David?
Yes. I guess a comment and a question. First, the comment about the rhetoric. I guess as a voting citizen, I got to express my disappointment for all parties who really kind of throw the rhetoric around. Yes, yesterday we were listening to complaints of class warfare again.
David? David, quickly here. Your phone is breaking up. Your question, quickly.
Is this better?
Yes, a little bit. Go ahead.
Okay. Just basically saying a great deal of disappointment in the amount of rhetoric on all parties. But the question being, what about reducing sales tax? We talk about all these rebates. We talk about reducing income tax. Why don't we talk about reducing the sales tax?
Okay. Representative Abrams?
You know, I would answer the question that the Speaker and the Majority Leader did ask the Governor. If he had to choose between the income tax and the sales tax, which one does he find most in need of a cut? And he immediately responded the income tax. Minnesota has a relatively high sales tax rate, but it has a very, very narrow sales tax base. And you know, in the future, if we were going to do something in the sales tax area, I would hope that we could take a look at some of the base issues. And the sales tax is going to get more and more attention, I think, in future years, simply because of the e-commerce issues and some of the other surrounding enforcement issues. But it is certainly not off our radar screen. It just didn't seem as much in need of repair as the income tax.
Senator Hodinger?
Well, one of the reasons that we have been reticent to make some of the reforms that have been talked about is that the governor's interested in having a very large study and consideration across the board in terms of looking at all taxes next year. And I think sales tax should be part of that. But if you look at rankings, which we often look at, when you look at the state and local sales taxes in Minnesota on a per $1,000 of income basis, we're below average. So the other areas where we are higher than average are the ones that people tend to look at.
John, your question, please.
Well, I kind of am following on one of the previous callers' comment about the rhetoric, and I'm getting a little tired of anyone who earns more than $30,000 a year being referred to as wealthy, number one. Number two, you artfully, I don't know which of you did it, but you artfully neglected to mention that the higher up you go into the tax bracket, the greater share of the tax burden that is actually paid by these people. So to talk about, you know, inequities in tax relief, or to use dollar figures where it makes your case better and percentage figures when it makes your case better, and not combine the two, I think is almost intellectually dishonest. The reality is the people higher up in the income brackets are paying an inordinately disproportionate share of the tax burden, and therefore any relief should at least include them, on an equal basis, if not more so. And the second part of the problem is that no one wants to address is we need to reduce spending. We need to be more careful. We need to look at all of the programs we have in this state if we're ever going to get down to a reasonable level of taxation. I'll take your response off the air. Thanks.
Senator Hottinger, you want to address the first part of that that question?
Well, I think it's based on an inaccurate assumption. The Revenue Department provides us some tax incidence numbers. That is, what percentage, based on your income, do you pay in taxes, all taxes, not just income taxes, in the state of Minnesota? And generally, whatever income tax bracket you're in, or whatever income level you're at, you pay about the same percentage of your income in taxes. Certainly, if you have higher income, you end up paying more dollars, but about the same percentage as if you only make about $20,000 per year, as opposed to $200,000 per year. So I don't think it's class warfare to talk about retaining that equity. The second question, I'm sorry, I forgot it.
Well, overall, state spending, that's where your focus should be on trying to pare down the amount of money that the state spends.
Right, and I think we do that. One of the contentions that the Senate has this year is we need to balance the budget twice, in essence. We want to balance the budget in terms of making sure we fit in with the governor's numbers, and we want to balance some of the spending in areas of education and low wages in the healthcare industry. So we try to balance it in that degree. The reality is, looking at state spending as a percentage of personal income, we've gone down for the last 3 or 4 years, I think.
Representative Abrams, what about state spending? Should there be more effort put into cutting how much the state spends as opposed to all the attention that's paid on the taxes and tax cuts and the rest?
Well, I agree, Gary, with the caller, and one of the disappointments about the debate so far is that there's approximately a $3.1, $3.2 billion surplus over the next 3 years. And as near as we can tell, the Senate, through one-time spending, through capital spending, et cetera, is spending almost $1.7 billion of it, or $1.6 billion of it, and the tax cut is approximately $1.4 billion. And let me say something positive about Governor Ventura, because I always seem to be kind of saying negative things about him. Let me say something positive about him. The rate of increase in state spending in this biennium over the last biennium is less than one-half of the increase. On a biennium-to-biennium basis, if you back out the tobacco endowment issue, it's somewhere between 6 and 7%, and that contrasts to the double-digit increases under Governor Carlson. So I do believe that Governor Ventura does deserve some praise in the area of exercising some degree of fiscal restraint.
Now, Gary, can I add one quick thing?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Some business groups did a study recently about what impacts the ability to attract workers to Minnesota. And the most important thing in attracting workers to Minnesota was a positive: our quality of life. The second most important thing was K-12 education. Only after that did we start looking at negatives relating to the income tax. So we can't sacrifice the two things that are best at getting workers to come to Minnesota.
Now, not to be too cynical, but as we wrap up this segment here, does it really come down, given the fact we have this three-legged stool of government, does it really come down to which one of you folks is able to get the governor on your side on any given issue, and that's who prevails?
You know, Gary, I really don't think so. I think that, first, I think the 201 members of the legislature are going to do what they collectively believe is in the public interest. And I think that the Senate Democrats are going to do what they think is in the public interest, as well as the House Republicans. At the end of the day, you're going to have to have, in a three-way agreement, all three parties feel like there is enough in it that's good to outweigh what's in it that they may perceive to be bad. In a two-way agreement, you have the, you know, similar dynamic at work here. But I don't think that simply because the governor happens to be on your side, that if it's a bad deal, that you're going to see either the Senate Democrats or the House Republicans say, well, gee, it's two against one, time to fold and sacrifice our principles and take a bad deal.
Mm-hmm. Senator Hottinger?
Well, I agree with Representative Abrams, because I don't have a cynical view of this process. Representative Abrams and I have strongly held views that are different on some of these issues. But the one thing we share, and I think my colleagues share, is a commitment to doing ultimately what's best for this state and to try and find a way to reach that agreement. So I think where the governor comes down may have an impact on that. But I think the legislative decision and hopefully agreement that we reach will be reached because we find the common ground, or at least we are willing to elevate certain issues over others and reach an agreement.
Thanks, gentlemen. Appreciate you joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Two key members of the Minnesota legislature who will be working on finding common ground between really what appear to be widely divergent House and Senate approaches to tax cuts this year. State Senator John Hottinger, who is a member of the Senate Tax Committee, and Ron Abrams, Republican and chair of the Minnesota House Tax Committee, joining us during this first half hour of the program as we take a look at some of the tax bills that are moving through the legislature, some of the concepts being discussed, and we'd love to have you join our conversation here. Give us a call. Love to find out what your view is of the two proposals that are now on the table, the House bill, which is kind of structured around an across-the-board income tax cut, a Senate bill, which is much, much smaller in size, both bills, and the governor's proposal, for that matter, talking about another sales tax rebate, although there are some, as you heard, some differences in that as well. Give us a call here, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. We'll get some more of your calls in just a couple of minutes. This hour, we're taking a look at the tax bills that legislators are considering. Conference Committee, House Senate Conference Committee, is expected to begin work either tomorrow or Thursday and trying to work out some of the big differences between those tax bills. And joining us now is State Finance Commissioner Pam Wheelock. Talk a little bit about the governor's position on taxes. Good morning, Ms. Wheelock.
Good morning, Gary.
Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
We were just talking a few minutes ago with Representative Ron Abrams and Senator John Hottinger, and they suggested that they may have to work out an agreement among themselves, DFLers and Republicans, if the governor doesn't get involved and get active. And is there any concern that that's in fact what's going to happen here?
Well, I guess a couple of responses. I think, first of all, the governor expects the House and the Senate to be deliberating with each other and debating these issues. He submitted his recommendations, and their job now is to react to them. But to suggest that he hasn't been involved is, I think, misleading, or at least he's met with leadership of both the House and the Senate in the last couple of days several times. So some would argue that he's more involved than past governors in his appearances before legislative committees and his public events on issues like unicameral and LRT. So while it's true he does expect them to get down to work and start making some decisions to bring sessions to close, I think to think that he's completely uninvolved is certainly misleading.
Is he open to big tax cuts? I know he's talked repeatedly about capping the license tab fee, but
right.
Other than that, for this session, that's about all he's talked about. Is he open to some compromise here?
Well, I think big is clearly a relative term. The governor takes great pride in helping to forge the relationships and commitments last year that provided the biggest tax cut in the nation and in the state's history. But I think in this off-budget year, the question is how big or when do you reach the point where it's too big, and then how do you deliver it? He has been advocating for a long time that the way we pay for roads doesn't make any sense, that the tabs that people pay aren't really tied to the benefit they get or the wear and tear that they produce on the road, that it doesn't has any logical underpinnings. So it's true that he has advocated this session that the big tax cut, permanent tax cut, about $275 million worth in the first year, starting this next July, be delivered in the form of having a cap on how much you pay for your tabs at $75. So that is his initiative, and he's looking to see some action on that this year, it's clear. But I think he's also said that it's no secret he's also been concerned about property taxes, and Matt Smith, the Commissioner of Revenue, is doing a lot of work during the year, this past year and the months to come, to develop some meaningful tax reform recommendations to the governor and to the legislature. And I think he's signaled that he'd be open to talking about some property tax changes this year that would be consistent with the principles that Matt's working off of and might have otherwise been in the in his package of recommendations for next year. So, yes, he certainly does believe that we can do permanent tax relief, but he's going to stick to his guns and say that he's not going to be irresponsible and he's not going to promise more than the state can safely deliver on in the future. We're not going to overshoot our headlights.
Why should people believe this revenue forecast more than the last 17, which have turned out to be inaccurate?
You know, the funny thing is, I bet you that's exactly what a lot of legislators were saying in about 1981, when the problem was just the reverse, that we were having deficit after deficit. We're not saying that the forecast is right. In fact, Tom Stinson, the state economist, would be the first one to say that it'll be wrong. It's an imprecise science, and no one can predict. I mean, who would have guessed in 1992 that we would have 9 years of economic expansion? I mean, it's a record-breaking period of economic expansion. What we are saying is that you all have to use the same measuring stick, that you can't have someone using a different yardstick than another's, or you can't have somebody using centimeters and others inches. Everybody has to be starting from the same place. There's got to be some discipline, and we've got to use the best information that we have today, which has historically been the forecast. I think the problem is some people just find that inconvenient because they want to deliver more than most of us think that we can reasonably afford.
Mm-hmm. Will the governor veto an across-the-board tax cut if it works its way through essentially the House position, if it somehow prevails in the conference committee?
Well, I think it's way too early to talk about that. I think what he signaled in his letter to the legislature yesterday was that his concern with their bill wasn't the specific makeup of the bill. He was not, you know, drawing a line in the sand about what form of permanent tax cuts would or wouldn't be acceptable. What he was saying is that this was clearly unaffordable and that they need to get much more realistic about how much money is on the table. And we've got permanent money available for permanent tax cuts or permanent spending for that matter. And we've also got some one-time money that are better suited for one-time uses. So I think we'll wait and see. We'll kind of try to work that out with the House and the Senate about how you deliver that permanent tax cut. But he has been clear to say that income tax cuts, as the House is asserting, versus the TAB cuts, that dollar for dollar, in other words, if you spend the same amount on tax relief, that middle-income families actually benefit more from a TAB cut than they do the income tax cut.
Finally, Commissioner, I'm just curious, has the administration taken a position on this idea of setting aside a small portion of the sales tax for the Department of Natural Resources, a permanent funding source? This would be a constitutional amendment that people would vote on this fall?
Well, if you're talking about the one that came out of the Senate Tax Committee yesterday, that's probably not so small. I think that's about $100 million a year, and that's probably beyond the governor's appetite for talking about dedicating funding for that purpose. But I would say, you know, the governor has taken the lead this session in recommending a fee increase and some general fund increases in the off year. And I think he thinks that the appropriate time to debate those kinds of policy changes is as part of the biennial budget when you have all of the competing interests on the table.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Sure.
State Finance Commissioner Pam Wheelock joining us. We're talking this hour about some of the tax proposals that are being considered now by legislators. Conference Committee, House Senate Conference Committee, begins work this week. Both the House and the Senate have passed their versions of the bill, the tax bill, and they do vary significantly. The House bill is built around an across-the-board cut in income taxes. The Senate bill would increase the exemption a bit and reduce license tab fees a bit, but essentially that's it. All both bills would send back a tax rebate to taxpayers, and the governor's proposal, essentially a rebate, a tax rebate, and a cap on license tab fees. So some fairly widely divergent approaches to tax cuts. Interested in your thoughts on what approach, if any, the legislature should be pursuing. Give us a call here, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Don, what would advice would you pass on to our lawmakers?
Well, Gary, I'm a little bit frustrated that all the conversation is about tax cut, tax cut, tax cut. And I just hope that people will keep in mind the whole reason why I pay taxes and presumably our society pays taxes, which is to do some things together that we cannot do individually. And to me, those things include educate our children, public transportation, and maintain our environment to maintain street parks, clean water, and some of the things that cannot be done individually. And I'm feeling that that's all been lost in the rhetoric, and we are not focusing, for example, that previous question about natural resources. There was an opportunity to take care of our natural resources for the long term, for our children and grandchildren. That's the reason I pay taxes, and I think that should be part of this debate.
Now, we had a caller on a few minutes ago saying that really what the legislators ought to be talking about is cutting the size of government, reducing substantially the amount that government spends.
But yes, I heard that, and I think that's a tool without a vision. I think what's important is to remember the whole reason we have government and the whole reason we pay taxes is presumably to work together to accomplish some things that we cannot do individually. And like I mentioned, that's education, transportation, and taking care of our environment are just three that I would mention. Public safety, there are some other things that are clearly collective things that we need to pay taxes for, and I think that should be on the table, not just too much, get rid of it.
Okay. Thanks, Don. Appreciate the call. Let's move on to Kathy, who joins us from St. Paul. Good morning, Kathy.
Oh, hello.
Yes, your comment, please.
Excuse me?
Your comment, please.
Yes. Well, actually, I was wondering if there's any proposal to reduce the Minnesota debt. I didn't really hear them talk about that. I mean, I understand Minnesota has debt in the form of bonds, and would it not be beneficial to possibly use some of the surplus to reduce this debt, which, of course, we pay out interest on? You know,
mm-hmm.
And you know, I guess in a personal sense, you know, and we always talk about not passing on debt to our children. You know, they talk about this in the federal government, and it does seem like a good idea when we have a lot of money to try to pay off some debt. This is what I would do in my own household, and a lot of people that I talk to are saying the same thing. You know, if I've got a time of plenty, I try to reduce my debt.
Now, I think the argument against that there is there are at least some proposals to as part of the bonding bill to pay for some of those projects with cash this year.
Oh, not increase the bonds.
Well, both actually.
Oh.
But I think the argument against that idea is that these are long-term projects, and there's no reason to burden people today for projects that will be benefiting people 20, 30, 40, 50 years down the road, that we should all share in that cost.
Well, yeah, except for, too, the cost of interest is, you know, what is paid out by taxpayers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the interest, if it wasn't being paid on interest, it could be used for, you know, programs like the previous caller was talking about. And I heard on television they said that in the national debt that everybody west of the Mississippi pays interest on the debt every year. Mm-hmm. All of their taxes that are collected. And I thought, this is terrible. If we paid down that debt, we'd have more actual money to pay on the programs we want.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Kathy.
Okay.
Appreciate the comment.
Mm-hmm.
Let's check in with David, who joins us from Minneapolis. Good morning, David.
Good morning. Well, I kind of echo the previous two callers and things that nobody's talking about also that have been on the radio sometime in the past where, you know, people flee the state because of taxes and companies, but then there's been programs where people have come back and companies have come back because of the quality of life in Minnesota. I mean, I've not traveled widely, but I have traveled a little bit, and I've been in some, like in the East, Rhode Island and Maine and places like that where their downtown sections are just, if I had a farm, I wouldn't put my livestock in those buildings. Louisville, Kentucky. Oh, their downtown mall is just, from one end on up to the river, it's just shut down, or at least it was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just one building after another boarded up. I mean, we have a tremendous quality of life, and I make less than $30,000 a year. I don't like paying the taxes that I do, but my lifestyle is around those taxes, and I love being able to just get on my bike with my kids and go around the parks. This past Saturday or Sunday, it was Saturday, I went out with my oldest boy, and we went around the 29th Street, you know, by Lake Street there, where they're opening that up for bike trail, and that, and up by the university, and it's not all finished yet, and it was a dickens of a ride, but without the taxes we pay, that wouldn't exist. The Cedar Lake Trail and all that wouldn't exist, and that is, you know, granted, not everybody enjoys it, but in the summertime, you get people out there in wheelchairs, you know, wheeling along, and they'll be able to on the entire system. You know, there's all this, and then, you know, previously on the educational thing, put all the money, if nothing else, into education. It's the greatest investment that we could possibly make for a return on our dollar, is to give kids a free education that have, you know, a C or a B grade on up through college, through 4 years of college or tech school or whatever. Mm-hmm. They're going to pay taxes, and it's going to pay back so much more.
Isn't there some upper limit, though, David? Because conceivably you could come up with an ever-ending list of what appear to be legitimate social needs that should be supported with tax money.
Well, I hear that, and I think the discussion should be, what are the base social needs? You know, what would return the greatest, you know, what would give us the greatest return on investment? And look at it that way, and not just cut taxes, because the economy is going to go south again. You know, it's just a matter of when. And then if we've cut taxes, what guy sitting up there in the big house is going to want to raise taxes to, you know, when the economy is in the doldrums? Mm-hmm. And we need money again for you know, to cover the taxes that we've cut. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think anybody. I think, you know, we could so could wind up in a bad way.
Okay. Thanks, David.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate
Thank you.
The call. Let's move on to a caller from Bemidji. Bob, thanks for checking in this morning. Your comment, please.
Yeah, I guess the question that keeps coming up, or I keep asking, and I really never get a satisfactory answer to, if we in fact have excess funds in the state coffers, why is not this given back to, in a pro rata basis, to everybody, the corporations? If we're going to determine the sales tax, they have paid Anderson Corporation, Honeywell, 3M. I bet you it would be interesting to know how much sales tax on raw materials they have paid into the state. These other companies, if it's on an income tax basis, why, pro rata wise, it's not that money given back to them on the same ratio as if they paid in. And I keep hearing one other comment about people that have been left out. Who are these people? People that have not paid taxes to the state of Minnesota? Who has been left out? Those questions, I guess nobody ever wants to address them or wants to acknowledge that they even exist.
Well, I think in terms of, I think I can help a little bit with the second part of the question. The retroactive feature with the sales tax rebate would affect those primarily like senior citizens who pay sales tax. You know, they have a Social Security and income. Thus, they don't have an income to speak of, but they do pay sales tax. And also, working students who are claimed as dependents by their parents. Again, they've been paying sales tax, but presumably weren't included in last year's sales tax rebate. So I guess those are the people that they're talking about.
But if you talk about the total amount of money that the government has collected, how does that compare with, say, like what Anderson Corporation in Bayport has paid sales tax on their paints, their wood products, their nails, their other fasteners? What have they paid, and what percentage have they paid in as opposed to everybody? Why are they totally, and I'm not a...
Right, we've got to go here.
Why are they totally left out?
Okay, Bob, good question.
Yep.
Thanks for asking.
Yep.
Bob joining us from Bemidji, wrapping up this hour of program here on our midday program, taking a look this hour at the tax proposals that legislators will now be trying to reconcile. House Senate Conference Committee meets tomorrow or Thursday. They begin deliberations trying to reconcile the big differences between the House and Senate approaches to tax cuts.